I'm starting to see a noticeable pattern with this podcast. I do it on Spotify, I get a lot of listeners, but not as many as I want. I do it on YouTube, I get a ton of listeners. More than what I expect. Maybe I should be on YouTube full time. And we'll think about it. From the Vault 319 recording room, this is the Tweakle Podcast. What's up, everybody? It's Jake Alexander, the voice in the void, the lone wolf, your favorite host with a lisp. How the hell are you? Happy Friday to you, and welcome to another episode of the Tweakle Podcast. If you've been rocking with us for a while, I truly appreciate you stopping by and listening. And if this is your first time ever hearing to me do this podcast thing, hey, go check out any of the older episodes. I'm pretty sure you'll find something to keep you informed and entertained at the same time. It is going to be a good show today. We are going to talk about CinemaCon 2024 briefly. We're going to talk about the entire series for Fallout. I'm just going to give you my thoughts on it after watching the entire series, and we're going to talk about that last episode of X-Men 97, episode number 6. Very good episode, filler episode, but a good episode nonetheless. And we have our weekend watch list back, and it is full of Kurt Russell, and you will understand once we get to it. But besides that, let's jump right into the news. Let's start the news off today talking about the box office. Civil War took the top spot over this past weekend, bringing in just under $26 million. Godzilla X Kong holds on to the number two spot with $15.5 million and has now grossed over $400 million worldwide. It's just a smash hit. I don't think anybody was actually expecting it to go that high, but I expected it to be a great movie, and it was a great movie. Now, Monkey Man had a large fall near 60%, but it still sits at just over $24 million now overall worldwide, which is just got to clap your hands and be happy for Dev Patel and that film. We also, over this past weekend, we got trailers for three different big films coming out this year: Transformers 1, M. Night Shyamalan's Trap, and Boy Kills World. Now, all three look well, but my problem with, I would say all three, they're slightly too long. They tell you too much of what's going to happen in the movie. Boy Kills World is going to be a hit. It is going to be a sleeper hit. I am putting my money and my chips in the center of the table, and I'm betting on it. I think Transformers 1 will bring in a good bit of a nostalgia for a lot of people. And Trap, it's M. Night Shyamalan. You know there's going to be a twist somewhere in it. It looks like an interesting film, interesting concept of a serial killer or maniac killer being tracked by the police inside of a crowded concert. I don't know how that's going to play out, but it's M. Night Shyamalan. I've liked pretty much all of his movies that he's done. All three trailers are over on the IG page if you do want to see them. So just don't forget to go over there and check them out first chance you get. Shout out to Soundgarden. They finally got their first ever number one with a 30-year-old song. Now, you know, we had the eclipse last week, not that long ago. And because while that was going on, a lot of people took to playing Black Hole Sun. Now, the song itself never hit number one, and Soundgarden, oddly enough, as popular as they were, they never actually had a number one hit. Well, because of all of that playing the song during the eclipse and the run-up to this week, that song finally hit number one on the hard rock charts. So Soundgarden, congratulations. I'm glad you finally got yourself a number one. I actually like Soundgarden. They've been very quiet after losing their front man, Cornell, not too long ago. And they've been doing shows on and off ever since he passed away, but they haven't done much. I think this may spur them to get out there and do new music, which would be good. I do like Soundgarden. I don't know who their lead singer would be, but much respect to them and much success to them as time goes on. Keanu Reeves is now going to join the cast of Sonic 3 as the voice of Shadow. That's right. John Wick is joining the Sonic crew. This is going to be fun. Keanu Reeves, everything he does turns to gold. I'm not the only person that notices that. Him joining that cast is, that's a good pick. Him coming off the John Wick movies, he's one of the few people in Hollywood that almost everybody likes. He's universally liked across the board, not just by fans, but by other actors as well. Him joining the Sonic 3 cast, feather in their cap. I'm pretty sure he's going to do a wonderful job. Quentin Tarantino is backing away from his 10th film called Movie Critic. Now, it was supposed to be based on the same Brad Pitt character that was in the Hollywood Story one with Bruce Lee and being beat up and thrown into the car. Excuse me. So Quentin Tarantino has said that his next film, his 10th film, which was supposed to be Movie Critic, will be his last. But he's decided to shelf this movie for now and go back to the drawing board and see what he's going to do with the film. I don't believe Quentin Tarantino when he says he's only going to do 10 and he's going to stop. Now, I do understand that everything he said he'd do, he's done, but I don't think he'll let it go after 10 films. He's such a really good director, and he has the bug to tell stories and to do films. He believes that everything after your 10th film is usually two or three of them are trash, and that's what you're remembered by, nothing before that. And he doesn't want to be one of those directors who walks into the sunset with two bad films as his last two films. He wants to stop after 10, but I don't think it'll happen. And if he does make this film, it's going to be some time. Excuse me. They were supposed to actually start shooting at the end of April, but it doesn't look like they're going to make it. So we shall see what happens. If I get more news about it, I'll let you know. So James Gunn has cast Ma and Pa Kent for the upcoming Superman movie. Now, the woman playing Ma Kent, Neva Howell, she looks a lot like everything we think of for Ma Kent, and pretty much everybody who has seen it and everybody who has talked about it, they're pretty much on board with it. It's who he picked to play Pa Kent that has everybody scratching their head like, I don't get it. The man's name is Pruitt Taylor Vance. Now, if you don't know the name, don't be surprised. He's had a lot of almost 35 years, acting in Hollywood. Almost all of his characters that he play are kind of offbeat, and they're just supporting characters. To me, most famously, he was the priest, the one that was psychic and could hear voices in the Constantine movie that starred Keanu Reeves, oddly enough. Just talking about Keanu Reeves. If you go back to that movie and you talk to the priest who was constantly drinking himself to death when the demon was affecting him in the middle of the movie, that man is Pruitt Taylor Vance. So he doesn't actually look like we know of Pa Kent, right? He looks older now for sure, but I don't know. I don't know. I trust James Gunn. Let's see how it all turns out. I'm pretty sure it'll be okay. If you are a fan of Fallout, which we will be, I'm going to give you my retrospect on the series itself coming up next. If you're happy with the series, I'm glad you're happy, because I love the series very much for a couple of specific reasons. But you ought to be happy with this. Season 2 has been greenlit already. We will be getting a second season for Fallout coming soon, and I can't wait for that. Looks like the series itself now is fantastic. Where they go, I got a few ideas, but I'll save that for another day and time. I was going to talk about CinemaCon 2024 in this episode. I said it last week, but I decided not to. And the reason why is because most of what we got out of CinemaCon this year, it was all kind of generic. We just got a handful of talking points, and we got some trailers, which anytime we get a trailer, I always put it on the Instagram page if I think most people want to see the movie. I'm going to start doing a lot more trailers, whether you know about the movie or not. That's all we pretty much got out of CinemaCon. It's not a whole lot to talk about, so I'm just going to nix that and just tell you it was okay, right? It doesn't feel as magical as it usually does. There's a lot of people who didn't even show up to CinemaCon this year because most of these companies have their own streaming sites, so they are having their own type of thing going forward, right? We see that with San Diego Comic-Con, so many people not showing up to there, like Disney and Marvel and DC. They have their own thing, right? They have Disney Day and Marvel Day and DC Day, where they do their own thing throughout the course of the year, and that's why they're not showing up to San Diego Comic-Con. Now, did those three specific ones show up to CinemaCon this year? Yes, but a lot of other names, big names in the movie industry were obviously absent from this one. And I guarantee you they're going to have their own thing sometime later this year that you can watch online or whatever. So just keep an eye out for your local con when people usually come, because I got a feeling a lot of people are going to start pulling back. And that means we're going to lose a lot of cons going forward. And that makes me very, very sad. We're going to end the news today by saying congratulations to Vaughn Geffing. Now, if you don't know the name, I'm not surprised. This is a political thing. But he was just elected as the new first minister in Wales just this past Wednesday. And that makes him the first black leader of a government in the UK. That is fantastic. If you want to look it up, look up his acceptance speech when he finally took power. It is a very moving, very touching, and very poignant speech. And I insist that everybody go and listen to it. Believe me, you will not be disappointed by hearing that. So shout out to Vaughn Geffing. Congratulations. And I wish you Godspeed and much luck and much success in your new position. That's all the news for now. Don't forget to check the Instagram page at @_Tweakle_pod. And don't forget to head over to our YouTube page, the Wolf in Nerd Clothing, at @W.I.N.K. because clothing is going to be spelled with a K. And I'm gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna talk about that Fallout series and why I loved it so much. There are very few, and it is far between, that live action renditions of comic book films, anime, and video games do as good of a job as Fallout. After the first two episodes, I was slightly expecting a downgrade in the series, but I was pleasantly surprised that it kept hitting higher marks throughout its run. And I'm glad. Over the past few years, we've had a few good swings at live adaptations. Most recently, the anime One Piece has become a critically acclaimed hit among anime fans and critics alike. But we've also had more than a few letdowns along the way as well. Knights of the Zodiac, I'm looking at you, by the way. But thankfully, Fallout has redeemed my faith in live-action adaptations going forward, but for a specific reason. Was it the attention to detail? No. Was it the inclusion of the plethora of video game tropes? Nah, not really. How about the acting? The writing? The jokes, maybe? Nope. None of those. Now, don't get me wrong. Fallout hits bullseyes on just about all of those. But Fallout excels in just one area that so many seem too dense to focus on, and that's direction. The Fallout series, much like the One Piece adaptation, spent most of their time making sure the tone of their shows matched that of the source material. The Fallout series and the action therein plays out as if we were playing a new iteration of the same old game. And it's no wonder, considering Todd Howard, director and developer lead at Bethesda, that's the company behind the Fallout series, has said that he sees this series as basically Fallout 5, a whole new game. Howard and series executive producer and director Jonathan Nolan worked hand in hand to make sure that the show meshed with the games, and they succeeded. It makes me wonder how so many have yet to understand this one simple fact. If you let the creative minds behind the source material, or at the very least someone who is deeply knowledgeable of the source material, lead the project, you will almost always be headed toward a superb product in the end. One Piece adaptation did the exact same thing. They let the man who created the series be the head of the entire run. He knows what he's doing. He created it. Now, true, Bethesda is not the actual origin of, or original company, I should say, for the Fallout series. They bought the rights to it and they now own everything to it when starting with Fallout 3. But think about everything that they bought into. They took the original series, they kept the tone, they kept the feel of it, and they just made more games. Now here we are with the series and they did the exact same thing. Now, it may be an all-new story, but it still feels very much like everything we know of the Fallout games. It is a wonderful series. Everything is pitch perfect to the games. The action is very intense. The jokes are truly funny. And everybody in their acting and the script writing are on point. Nothing was left to chance, and they came up with a superb product. I applaud them. I am so happy that this series is as good as it is. Now, the entire series for Fallout is playing on Amazon Prime. You can watch it all 8 episodes. And I suggest that you do so. And the good thing for us is that it has been greenlit for a second season. And I can't wait to see what we get with that. I'll be right back. So X-Men 97 Episode 6 was titled Life Death Part 2, and it dropped this past Wednesday, and it was a very, very good episode. Now, was it as emotionally taxing and as emotionally draining as last week? No, it wasn't. This is very much a filler episode, but it does a great job of doing what it needed to do. We got to see two different love stories, one in space and one on Earth. Now, the Earthbound love story is the one of Storm and Forge, and we get to see them come to grips with having to fight off the adversary. That's that jar. That's that large owl-looking demon that is basically having them trapped inside of their cabin out in the Southwest. Now, that demon does get dealt with in time, even after attacking Forge and injecting poison into him that is slowly killing him. Forge is able to use a little bit of Cheyenne magic that he learned from his mother, and by using his mother's book in order to trap the demon, in order for them to get out of the cabin and to make their way to a cave in which there is a flower growing, a cactus that is only grows in darkness. Storm has to get this flower in order to make a balm to rub on Forge in order to cure this poison. Now, in order for Storm to find it, she must face her deepest fear, being trapped in tight spaces. Storm, for much run of her life, has been claustrophobic, and she is very much aware that she is, but she still goes through and she faces her demons and the demon itself, the adversary, inside of this small space. And in doing so, she has to basically take the demons that are dogging her and make it a part of her instead of running from it. But that unlocks the power within her, and she is able to get her powers back, all the powers that she had lost after that blast from the gun in episode 2. Now all her powers is back. Now, I was expecting Storm to get her powers back. I just didn't expect it to be so soon. But Bo DeMeo and his crew did a wonderful job of telling this story over two basically just halves of episodes. This entire run of Storm going through, if you stretch this out, this could have been a 45 minute like special episode in the middle, and it would have told the whole story. But they did a good job of splitting this up into threes. We got the one where she meets Forge at the end of the last episode, and basically like an after credit scene. We got the one half of Life Death Part 1, and we get Life Death Part 2 right here, which basically is only half of this episode. And they tell the entire story. They do it pretty fast. They do a lot of the what's in the comics, and they put it right here in the episode for all to see. Very good job with this. Now, that space-based love story, with it, we get to see Lilandra of the Shi'ar Empire. She is the Empress, and that person that she's in love with is Professor Charles Xavier. That's right. He's back. He's not actually dead. He's up in space. He's running around with Lilandra, and he is soon, and in this episode, he is soon to actually be married to Lilandra, but her sister, Deathbird, is very much opposed to it. So she basically challenges him to a test of to see if he actually is true about being part of the Shi'ar Empire and not just trying to drag them back into the Milky Way. And as Deathbird put it, be based not in their own home world, but to be based on Earth in this backwards ghetto. And she actually called our corner of the universe ghetto. I thought that was just so funny. I cracked up laughing. Deathbird in this episode is very much racist and xenophobic of all Terrans, anybody from Earth, not just regular humans, but mutants as well. And she is, I love her character in this one. In the original, she was aligned with Apocalypse, as Apocalypse was trying to collect powerful psychics in order to enact his plan. And this one, it doesn't show that she's aligned with him, but we don't know that for sure. We never know what could happen by the time the series is by the time this series itself is over. So much is happening, so you never know what could be coming around the corner. Charles doesn't go along with it. At first, he was planning on doing it, but he realized that I can't leave behind and get rid of my memories of everything that I've built on Earth and all these people. They are, especially the X-Men, they are his children. So he takes them into the astral plane to try to teach them this lesson. But while in the astral plane, he gets a psychic message sent to him. I have an idea who sent that psychic message to him, but we'll get to that in a few minutes in the in my theories and Easter eggs. But he gets this psychic message that tells him that, hey, so much has happened, and in so much has happened, Gambit has been killed, and there's somebody that he should have seen been killed if they're sending him a message about people being killed, but he didn't. And also, we're going to get that in the Easter eggs and theories when I get to it. But he, when he comes to out of this psychic message and out of the astral plane, he tells Lalandra, I can't stay. I have to go back. I have to check on my children. I have to basically finish what I started. So he basically, the episode ends with him telling her that he's leaving, and she's very sad about it. He is very sad about it too, because they are very much in love with each other in the comic books and in this series and in the original animated series. That is very much a thing, and he is in love with her. So at some point, more likely the very next episode, we're going to see Charles get back to Earth and have to start piecing everything together. And I think by the time that episode is over as well, we're going to see more of Cable as they try to undo this attack on Genosha and undo the tragedy that happened in episode 5. Now, first we're going to get into the Easter eggs, and I'll get into the theories right after. Now, the intro changes every episode. We know that. And this one was no exception. We see that Magneto and Gambit have been removed from this episode, obviously, because they are now dead after the Genosha attack. But Nightcrawler has been added. We get to see him bamfing around over his name, carrying two sabers. Very comic book accurate. I actually love Nightcrawler. Is my second all-time favorite, so y'all already killed my favorite. Please don't kill him. Please don't kill Nightcrawler. Also added to the open, we get to see Lalandra from the first animated series. We get to see her and Charles holding hands and looking at each other, and scenes from her being in that original series are recreated and put into this opening. We actually also get to see a futuristic sentinel named Nimrod. I've talked about him before. We get to see him standing in Master Mode's chest. Now, that has got to be a Bastion clue. We've never seen the shot in this particular open. We've never seen it shot that way. We've seen Nimrod and Master Mode in the original series, and we've seen them together in the original series, but never like this. Never them basically saying that these two parts, one futuristic, one present day, are now basically being put together. That to me is a clue that Bastion is in fact in this series. Just like I said in the last episode, where that picture of the man with the black suit and kind of goldish buttons and his face is covered, that was Bastion. And then we get to see the hair as Magneto looks up when they first arrive on Genosha before the attack. We get to see that hair with the part in it and white eyebrows, and that, I said, that was Bastion as well. That was a clue that he's here, or at least he's involved in the attack on Genosha. I have a few theories about who else is in that, but we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, that's definitely a Bastion clue if there was ever one. This war that we see at the beginning of this episode out in space, this is between the Shi'ar and the Kree. Because of this fight, we see that a bunch of familiar faces show up. Among them, again, is Deathbird, who is Lalandra's sister. Like I said, she was very much aligned with Apocalypse in the original series. We don't know if she will be in this one, in this particular series. Maybe not, but we shall see. Things change very fast in this series. We actually get to see Ronan the Accuser show up, oddly enough. He has his hammer and he's trying to fight off the Shi'ar, but Deathbird actually is the one that brings him to heel. I love the fact that she's running around in stilettos, which looks silly, but she basically slams him to the ground and steps on his face, and the heel of her stiletto cuts him, and he starts to bleed right there in the middle of this supposedly cartoon, right? Very good, a very good detail to it. But we also get to see Vulcan. Now, if you don't know who Vulcan is the son of Corsair, but Corsair is the father of another X-Men, Cyclops. Yes, Vulcan is Cyclops' brother. So I expect to see Vulcan again at some point, maybe this season, maybe in the next season. These are very big characters. I don't think we're only going to be one-off, especially Vulcan and Deathbird. Ronan the Accuser, we may not see again, but those other two, more than likely, we shall see. Also in that half of the episode, Lalandra says that it was only a year since she helped Charles recover from his coma by using Shi'ar technology, and he's actually walking around with an exosuit of made by the Shi'ar. So that means that if he was only recovered from a coma, that means either the X-Men are helping Charles keep his secret that he's alive, excuse me, and he's out in space, or there has been a lot of psychic manipulation by Charles to make everybody believe that he's dead. So let's see how that shakes out. I got a feeling I know which one it was, but that's in our theories. We'll get to that in a minute. When Charles is in the astral plane trying to talk to the Shi'ar and make them understand why he can't give up his memories of Earth and of his children, the X-Men, he uses the phrase twice, children of the Atom. Now, this refers to two different things. Well, it's actually three. It refers to the book of the same name, Children of the Atom, by Wilma Shiraz. Now, in that book, the children are born and they are labeled mutants because of atomic testing. Their genetic structure is different and they have abilities and deformities and whatnot. And they are labeled children of the Atom. We actually hear Kevin Bacon use that in X-Men First Class, that line, children of the Atom, when talking about mutants as well. In the original X-Men story, it was supposed to be said that that the mutants' powers on Earth they developed because of radiation from atomic testing and atomic bombs being dropped on Japan. But they went with just, you know, genetic, you know, anomalies and everything that we know of now. Children of the Atom also refers to the 1990s X-Men run Children of the Atom and the video game from the 90s of the same name. If you've never read that book, Children of the Atom by Wilma Shiraz, read it. It's a very good book. I read it not too long after I started reading X-Men comics, after I found out that they were pretty much based on the ideas from that book. So you need to read it. It's a very good book if you've never read it. There's a moment when Charles is on the astral plane where he gets this psychic message and it tells him what's been happening on Genosha back on Earth, and he sees Gambit stands up in the middle of this classroom that Charles has created to teach the Shi'ar on the astral plane, and it's now filled with skeletons, and the Gambit that he sees is 40 feet tall, and he winds up firing that same green beam from the Wild Sentinel that attacked Genosha. He fires it at Charles, and the flesh is burned off of Charles, and Charles basically wakes up from that. But before he wakes up, that whole thing of Charles's skin melting off and all you see is the skeleton holding on and looking on in horror. That's an homage going back to Terminator 2 when Sarah Connor is having her dream of the first nuclear bombs that get dropped by Skynet. The same thing happens to her when she's standing next to the park and holding on to the gate. So I appreciate the reference from Terminator 2 into this. That means that very much Beau DeMeo and his team are very in tune with not only the X-Men itself, but everything that happened in the 90s and everything that was going on in the 90s with sci-fi that was atomic connected or very much connected to the X-Men. I love those little details. On the other half of it, there was Easter egg where after Storm gets her powers back and she shoots up out of this cave after finding the flower, she gets her powers back and the feathers after destroying the adversary are around her and they sort of melt away. And as they do, a new suit for Storm pops up, and it's her same black uniform that she wears in the original 1975 release from when the X-Men debuted in comics. It's called the Pride of the X-Men suit that she wears. It is the same black and gold trimmed one that we see her wear quite often in the comics, as opposed to the white one she wears most often in the animated versions. I love that suit. You don't get to see it very often. It has a crown that she wears almost all the time when she has that suit on. I just adore that suit. Like I said, you don't get to see it very often. I'm glad they actually put her in it in this particular run of the X-Men. When she is back with Forge and she's rubbing the balm from the cactus that she found in order to help heal him from the adversary's poison, she says the line, "Well, what are our demons but reflections of our fears and our shame. Now, this is a callback to WandaVision when she was talking, when Wanda was talking to Vision, and Vision said to her, well, what is grief but love persevering? That line took off and became a huge meme for a while, you know. So I appreciate the fact that this, again, links this this run of the X-Men to WandaVision. And we all know WandaVision is very much linked to all of the movies. So that means X-Men is squarely in the MCU. It doesn't matter if it's a different layer of the multiverse. It is part of the MCU, even though it's animated. I appreciate that. I'm so glad all these little links to the MCU are very much being used. I wonder if there are going to be any more links directly back to WandaVision, because this is pretty much the second one, right? In the last episode, Rogue said, Sugar, I can't feel you, right? And we all know, like I said last week, that Wanda said the same thing to Vision when she touched his lifeless body. I can't feel you. That's two direct WandaVision callbacks in as many weeks. I wonder if we're getting any more. Who knows? So now, as far as our theories go, now the first theory I have, and I know a couple of these may sound a little wonky, but just put some thought into it, and I'm you'll understand why I'm saying what I'm saying. First theory is Magneto isn't dead, right? Number one, he's holding on to Leech, so Leech could have easily just depowered the beam that's hitting him, because that's Leech's power. He can depower any mutant around him. The Sentinel is basically using a mutant power or something to help kill mutants. So he could have easily just like depowered the beam so they can survive. Now, the two reasons why I'm saying that there's no way Magneto should be dead. That's one of them. Now, one of the other reasons is, if Magneto was dead, why, when whoever sent this psychic message, and I'll tell you who I think sent it in a minute, whoever sent this psychic message to Charles all the way out in space, right, while on the astral plane, why did they only send a message that Gambit was dead? Why wouldn't they tell Charles, his best friend, right, the one person that he truly appreciates and is truly respects, the person he put in charge of the X-Men in his will, in his last will and testament, why wouldn't they tell him that Magnus is also dead? They didn't. Why? Because Magneto isn't dead. Now, the third reason why I don't think Magneto is dead, and this kind of goes to the comics, is because of all the characters in X-Men comics, who has more plot armor than Magneto? Seriously. I mean, look, I'm pretty sure if we put some thought into it, we'll find that maybe Logan or Cyclops, somebody would have more plot armor than him. Excuse me. But Magneto got to be up there if he ain't number one. There's no way in the world you'd kill off such an important character. With Charles coming back to Earth, you're going to need a foil for him, somebody to get pissed off more than anybody else that Charles is actually alive after everybody believing him dead. The only person that can have that much vitriol, that much anger toward Charles actually being alive, and it be justified, that anger being justified, that there's no way you can actually look this other person in the face and say, I did it for a good reason. It would be Magneto. You need him to be alive in order to be a foil for Charles. And the one thing that they have not changed in the entire time in the opening is that last scene, the face-off between Charles Xavier and the X-Men versus Magneto and the Brotherhood of Mutants. You need both of them to be alive to make that cohesive. Remember, they changed things specifically from episode to episode in the intro to set up different storylines, right? They never changed that one part. From the original series to this series, that one scene, that face-off at the end before we get the graphic for X-Men and in the original and X-Men 97 in this run, that has never been changed. It's always been Professor X and the X-Men versus Magneto and the Brotherhood of Mutants in that little scene at the end of the opening credits, and it's never been changed. The characters have never been pulled out. The look and feel of it from the original to this one has never been changed. They've never changed it, and I think that's because Magneto has never been gone. He's not dead. They may have put him at the beginning of the opening credits when he was the leader of the team, and then took him away because he's presumed to be dead, but I don't think he's dead after all. Now, if you just think about it, I'm pretty sure you'll probably come to agree with me. Now, my other theory. Now, the vision that Charles was sent, I believe it was by the same person, or should I say the same entity, and I think who sent the visions to not only him, but to Madeline and Jean in the last episode was the Phoenix Force. Remember, the Phoenix Force needs a host. It was Madeline and Gene. It was going back and forth with. We don't know which one it was at this point, right? We don't know if that was Madeline or Gene in the Phoenix Saga in the first series, in the original animated series. And we just realized that Madeline's been around a super long time from Sinister switching them off. It could go all the way back to the original series. But the whole point is the Phoenix Force would do this in order to get Charles back on Earth, because that means that there could be a link between Charles and Jean, or Charles and Madeline, and then the Phoenix Force could find a host. That is a wild and way out there theory, I believe, but I still think that that's it. There has to be some psychic force that is strong enough to send a message across space and through and across Earth simultaneously in order to send it to Jean, Madeline, and Charles at the exact same time, right? It would have to. So that's the only person I can think of, only entity I should say, that's strong enough to do it and would make sense within this series overall. Now, my last theory is, there's absolutely more than one villain behind this attack on Genosha and behind everything that's going on in this particular series. We know that Sinister is one for absolute sure, right? We know that Cassandra Nova should be too, because they said she's supposed to show up in this series. They said that in the previews before the series ever touched air. So I'm thinking that there's also Bastion, Apocalypse, and Mystique, that they are a cabal working behind the scenes in order to destroy the X-Men and to destroy mutants in general. Now, remember, Apocalypse doesn't like mutants or humans. He hates them all equally, right? He wants to destroy a lot of them so he can remake and reshape the world in his own image. I can see him aligning himself, or everybody aligning with him, because Sinister gets his mutants to in order to experiment on, right? Bastion basically gets to exact his revenge. Cassandra Nova gets to exact her revenge. Mystique, I'm only adding because we haven't seen hide nor hair of her, and she's too important to the X-Men and to the Brotherhood of Mutants and to the story of Magneto to not be around. So I think she's either hiding out somewhere, and we've seen her just as, you know, she shapeshifts, so maybe she's been another character. And I'm pretty sure the UN chick, the one with the glasses, that might be Mystique. And she could just be operating as an agent for Cassandra Nova, or maybe even Sinister. We know that they do cross over in a couple of different ways in the comic book. So I can see Mystique being in all of them in the same place, right? At the end of this episode, we saw Bolivar Trask saying, "Hey, I gave you my DNA so you can access master mode. What more do you want from me?" Then we see Sinister show up. So we know Sinister is the main, I would say the main villain. He's the face of this cabal of enemies that are taking it to not only the X-Men, but mutants in general. So I can't wait to see how this plays out later on in the series. We absolutely know Sinister is there. Cassandra Nova's supposed to show up. I'm still saying Bastion. I've had too many clues that make me believe Bastion is here, but we shall see by the time this particular season comes to an end. We only got 4 more episodes to go. We got episode 7, which is next week. And then we have 8, 9, and 10, which are actually which is a 3-parter miniseries between those three. But it all starts next week. The end all starts next week, and I can't wait for it. Very good episode. Like I said, it was a filler episode, which I know is a dirty word for all of us anime nerds out there. But in this particular case, it does its job well. It doesn't linger. It tells the story it needs to be told. It sets pieces on the board, sets them in place where it's supposed to be, and then it moves out of the way in order to get back to the main storyline back on Earth starting next week with episode 7. So fantastic episode all around. I can't wait until the next episode. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, be time for the last call. So that's it, and that's all. It's time for the last call. I want to thank each and every single one of you for tuning in this week. You didn't have to. You could be doing anything and be anywhere else, but you decided to hang out with me and hear me prattle on about whatever comes into my nerdy little mind, and I truly appreciate it. Okay, if it's 1, 5, 10, 100, 1,000 of you, I just truly love anybody who is decides to tune into this Poke Little Podcast. I say it every week, but I mean it every week. We got a few program notes, but before we get into that, how about we get into our weekend watch list? It's actually got two things from Kurt Russell. It's just a lot of fun from that old guy from back in the 80s. So our nostalgia pick, Big Trouble in Little China. I haven't seen this movie in a while, maybe a few years. One of my all-time favorite movies. It is just a cult classic. If you've never seen it, it's Kurt Russell is Jack Burton, truck driver, philosopher, and man of action, supernatural comedy, great movie from 1986. 80s nostalgia at its finest, quite honestly. Animation pick, Ragna Crimson. I actually watched this last week, but I'm going to watch it again. It is a really good anime. I didn't watch it all. I got a few more episodes to go. I'm going to finish it up this weekend. Our film pick, also Kurt Russell, Executive Decision. Really good movie, especially the fact that they kill a certain somebody early on in the movie. But when you watch it, you'll understand what I'm talking about. And our series pick, Bring It On Ghost. Now, this is a Korean K-drama, but it's also a comedy, a little bit of supernatural. A guy figures out he can see ghosts and he can actually attack them, so he makes a living on the side making money by being an exorcist, but he's not really that good at it. When you watch the series, you'll see what I'm talking about. It is kind of funny. I've seen it before and I'm gonna rewatch it again this weekend. Program notes, next week our full regular episode would actually be on YouTube on Saturday. The next Friday, we will have a special episode. Now, I was actually interviewed by my niece, turned into 3 hours, so I'm going to run a 1 hour episode next week, and we're going to finish it up with two more episodes that are equally an hour. And you're going to just enjoy the interview, actually hearing me answer questions for once. So I hope you tune in for that. So remember, the regular episode on Saturday over on YouTube, but then we'll start with our special episodes on Friday. I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy it. Since it's time to go, I want you all to get out there and enjoy your weekend, even if it's raining in your area like it's in mine. Still get out there and do something. Enjoy yourself. Take care of yourself. Take care of your families. Don't do anything to harm yourself. And remember, if you're feeling like you need somebody to talk to, if you're feeling like you're alone, you're never alone. Pick up the phone, call, or text 988. There's always somebody there to get you through those dark times. And we will end this episode the same way we end every single episode. God bless. I love you. And peace. See you next time. Listening to the Tweakle Podcast.